I have to apologize in advance today. I really feel compelled to apologize. I am distracted, put it this way. So, you know, when Rush Limbaugh and I were friends, and I would be the guy for a number of years who would send him updates during the Apple keynote while he was on air and I was not. And he had other people who would do it as well, but I was one of those people. And we are both obsessive Apple fans, and we enjoyed having conversations with each other because we would talk about Apple and not politics and the news of the day. And today is the Apple unveiling of the new iPhone and the new watch and the new goodness. And it starts at 1 p.m. Eastern, and I will be on radio, and I will be side-eyeing what's going on. And I'm just apologizing. Look, I can't. Y'all, I'm in the cult. It is a religion. It is a set. When I go to New York, I go to the glass Apple cube and I walk around it seven times praying to Steve Jobs. I just do. I love Apple products. I've got my MacBook Pro right here. I got my iPad over here. I got my iPhone here. I am in the cult of Apple. I admit it. When I was in first grade, I laid hands on an Apple II. My school grew up in Dubai, and every classroom had an Apple II, then an Apple IIe, eventually the Apple IIgs, which I still is my favorite Apple computer ever. And then they got into Macs, and whoosh, my head was just blown. And when I moved away from Dubai, I was literally we were the only family in the school that I knew of that did not have a computer in the house. And I asked my parents to go in, and Macs were extremely expensive, and I had no idea. I mean, I wanted an Apple computer. It was like $5,000. And of course, my parents were going to get it. They had a realistic idea of what money was, and I did not. And they wound up getting me a computer, a custom-built PC, MS-DOS, cutting edge, bleeding edge, got to run Windows 3.1 on it. I am totally dating myself, I realize. But I went from being the only family in the school to have a computer to one of only, I think, three families in the public school in rural Louisiana that had a computer. And I had a computer and the teacher did not. And she would allow me to type out the spelling words. And I knew that copy and paste existed. She had no idea because she didn't really have a computer. And so for the spelling words, you had to write out the word five times. It was just cut, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste. Boom, done. Actually, all you did was copy once and paste, 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 paste. And I just control V, control V, control V, control V, and open Apple V or command V on the Mac. And I love my Mac. The moment I could get to college and afford a Mac myself, the prices came down. I bought one Performa from Sears and Roebuck, and I've never gone back to a PC. My entire staff, they all have Macs. I am a Mac-only business. My jerk producer / call screener has a Samsung phone and ruins all of our text messages, but I make him use a Mac for the show. And so occasionally we get blue bubbles from him. It's not that I don't like green. I'm just not poor. Why do I want the green bubble? Nonetheless, I digress. This is not the news you're here for. I realize I just got to apologize in advance that the Apple keynote is in an hour. And had I thought of it, I would have taken off work today because it is that important to me. And my calendar today, this is the busiest day I have had in weeks. I've been in meetings since 9 o'clock this morning and they won't stop until 10 o'clock tonight. Now, all of that being said, I will move on. The left has decided that the vaccine mandate is constitutional, and they have gone through the repertoire of Supreme Court cases, and they have found a case where the United States Supreme Court in 1905 authorized and said it was perfectly constitutional and legal to have vaccine mandates. Therefore, Joe Biden's vaccine mandate is constitutional. I happen to be a lawyer. Well, I shouldn't say I'm a lawyer. I'm not a practicing lawyer right now. You know, I would still be practicing law, but there's this thing called a client, and they're really annoying, and I didn't like them, and you had to deal with them as a lawyer in addition to dealing with other lawyers. You know, my turn of being a lawyer was somewhat complicated. I was a great transactional attorney, and I was a great elections lawyer. I defended elections. I got elections thrown out. I know election law, and it's one where it has shaped my perspective on the 2020 race. I was a great elections lawyer. I was a great transactional lawyer. I could incorporate businesses. I could do bond deals. I could do property. I loved transactional law. In fact, I would do discovery for litigators. So when you're, when you file a lawsuit, you sue someone, there's this process called discovery. And each side gets to ask the other side questions and request documents. And my request for production of documents and interrogatories were so good that my law firm actually had me save them for every lawyer in the firm to use. I loved the transactional side of it. With transactions, you got to figure out the loopholes and stuff, which is very much when you ask for a request for production of documents or interrogatories, you ask some very distinct questions. In fact, if you file in federal court, each side is required to answer certain questions and provide certain documents out of the gate. And you're limited in the numbers you can do. You got to make them full. You've got to be able to object to ones that are too broad, too vague. But I loved the request for production documents. I hated going to court. You know, I wanted to go to court. And this is a very similar story. A lot of lawyers have. You want to go to court and then you get there and you're like, I don't really like this. I like the transactional side. Or the transactional guys go to court and they get a taste of it and they love it. I wanted to go into it. Actually, I went into it because Saxby Chambliss, who was the U.S. congressman at the time in Georgia, whose campaign I worked on, was running for the Senate. He told me I should go to law school because law school is the MBA of politics. It'll open all the doors in Washington. Then I got married to a girl who did not want to move to Washington. And by then I didn't really want to either. So I wound up practicing law for about 6 years till one of the lawyers in my firm came in one day, closed the door and said, do you know what the definition of a dumb rear end is? I said, no. And he said, you hate practicing law. Go do politics. And I did. But I was a good lawyer, except that I hated litigation and criminal litigation, which is a lot of what I wound up having to do. And I left, but I know how to read cases still. The greatest thing about law school is not practicing law. It's that it reteaches you how to think in ways liberal arts educations no longer do. How to research, how to analyze, how to distinguish, how to nuance. And a lot of the people who are making the case for Joe Biden that the vaccine mandate is constitutional because the Supreme Court says so, they're hanging on to a case that doesn't really have relevance to what Joe Biden did. You're about to start hearing a lot of progressive cite Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And you're not lawyers, I realize, but I can explain this one to you because you need to understand this so that you understand how this case does not apply. What a lot of people are doing is saying, oh, look, in 1905, the United States Supreme Court said vaccine mandates are constitutional, therefore Joe Biden can mandate a vaccine. Except every case in the Supreme Court is based on a fact pattern. And if you don't have the same fact pattern, you don't have the same case. And the progressives who are saying Joe Biden can do this because the Supreme Court in 1905 ruled a vaccine mandate is constitutional, they don't have the same facts. And so it's not the same case, so you can't say it's constitutional. And arguably, based on recent Supreme Court precedent, it's not. So the case the left decided is Jacobson versus Massachusetts. It's a 1905 Supreme Court case, and it did uphold a vaccine mandate for smallpox. It's true, but the facts are dramatically different from what Joe Biden did. The facts in Jacobson actually undermine what Joe Biden is doing. So why did the Supreme Court in 1905 say that a smallpox vaccine mandate is constitutional? Well, it did so because it was a state-level mandate, not a federal government mandate. It was based on a statute specifically authorizing vaccine mandates, a statute that was passed by the state legislature of Massachusetts and signed into law by the governor of the state of Massachusetts and upheld by the Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts. And the United States Supreme Court got an appeal. This vaccine mandate, by the way, also had a fine. If you didn't take the vaccine, you would get fined. Now, I want to read for you the key component here. In Jacobson, the United States Supreme Court said that a state law mandating vaccines was constitutional for two reasons. One, the mandate was based on legislative authorization at the state level, and two, it is a police power of the states to take care of health. I'm going to read for you a paragraph from Jacobson. The authority of the state, that is the state of Massachusetts, to enact this statute is to be referred to what is commonly called the police power, Now, pay attention to this. This is very important language here. The police power is a power the state did not surrender when becoming a member of the union under the Constitution. In other words, the police power is a power of the several states, and that power did not transfer to the federal government when the states formed the union. Although this court has refrained from any attempt to define the limits of that power, yet it has distinctly recognized the authority of the state to enact quarantine laws and health laws of every description, indeed, all laws that relate to matters completely within its territory and which do not, by their necessary operation, affect the people of other states. What is this saying? That the United States Supreme Court recognizes the police power is a power of the individual states, not the federal government. And the Supreme Court has not attempted to define the limits of that police power for the states so long as those powers do not exceed the boundaries of the state. What the court has never done is distinctly recognize the authority of the federal government to enact a vaccine mandate, except in limited circumstances. Now, if you're confused here, I hope you're not, but if you are, let me break this down for you. In 1905, the United States Supreme Court was asked to throw out a vaccine mandate. It said the vaccine mandate was constitutional. Why did it do so? It did so because it ruled that the police power belongs to the several states, not the federal government, that enforcing health care is one of those police powers, and that in this case, the vaccine mandate was authorized specifically by a statute enacted by a state legislature, signed into law by the governor of that state, and enforced by local health care entities empowered to do so by that state legislature. In other words, everyone who's citing Jacobson to defend Joe Biden's vaccine mandate is actually citing a Supreme Court case that says the healthcare police power belongs to the individual states, not the federal government. The only settled law exceptions are for federal workers and the military. I've had a number of people from the military reach out to me through email and say, hey, they're mandating I get the vaccine. I don't want to get it. What do I do? You got no choice in the military. In the military, you're even required to take the anthrax vaccine, which is technically experimental. It's not approved for public use. In the military, if the commander in chief tells you, you got to get a vaccine, you got to get that vaccine, and you've got no choice. If you're a federal government employee outside the military and the commander in chief, the president, the head of the executive branch tells you to get a vaccine, you've got no choice. But the president of the United States cannot order the entire public to get it because the police power doesn't belong to the president of the United States, but to the governors of the individual states and their legislatures. So what President Biden has tried to do is to say OSHA gives him the power, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, that OSHA can do this, and he's ordered OSHA to do this. The problem is there's very recent Supreme Court precedent that you can't have, and it is the, specifically, it's the CDC and the eviction moratorium, that the CDC is given broad powers to fight healthcare, but clearly that's not in the sphere of tenant landlord contract law. It is unclear to me that OSHA has healthcare power in the way that the CDC doesn't have contract power. So the president doing this, and here's the thing, even if the president did it by executive order, the Supreme Court could say OSHA can do this, but you got to go through the normal regulatory process. OSHA has a regulatory process the president sought to bypass with an executive order. All of this is to say there are a lot of experts on TV right now telling you that, yes, the president has the power to do this. I would not believe those experts. One, it's unclear the president has it. Two, they're all citing the Jacobson case, and they very clearly have not read it because it applies to a state, not the federal government. And three, given the eviction moratorium ruling from the Supreme Court, it's pretty clear they're taking very narrow definitions of what are the powers of these regulatory agencies. I don't think that OSHA can do this. The Supreme Court may say otherwise, but it's going to be quite a while, and until such time as they do, you're not going to be forced into getting a vaccine. Now, if your business, if your job, if your employer tells you you've got to, well, then you have to. unless you want to go find a new job. But the federal government itself, I don't think, can force you to do this.
I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio, and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my X chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my X chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchairerik.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com. For $100 off your order, X Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X Chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchairerik.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com. For $100 off your order, X Chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchairerik.com. Take my advice. Get an X Chair. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, if you'd like to be a part of the program, 877-973-7425. Glad to have you with me. So, speaking of the vaccine, wasn't going to even talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. There is a musician. Her name is Nicki Minaj. I do not listen to her music. Last night, she tweeted she's got a cousin's friend. What? It's a little bit odd. I'm trying to find the exact tweet. Now she's gone off on Joy Reid for calling her out. This is become a bit of a drama, essentially that here it is. My cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding. So just pray on it and make sure you're comfortable with your decision, not bullied. All right, that's Nicki Minaj. My cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding. So just pray on it and make sure you're comfortable with your decision, not bullied. Now, I assume we all know the friend got an STD and is blaming it on the COVID vaccine. I mean, that seems to be the most logical explanation here. Because in all of the globally documented side effects of the COVID vaccine, and there are side effects, this is not one of them. Just so we're clear here, this is the only person on planet Earth who had this problem after getting the vaccine, as opposed to, I don't know, syphilis, something, I don't know. Well, Joy Reid, the idiot on MSNBC, and she really is like an idiot. She is not a smart person, Joy Reid. Well, she went after Nicki Minaj. In fact, she tweeted out, among other things, Joy Reid says, I mean, will anyone at all ever fully trust the CDC again? And who on God's earth would trust a vaccine approved by the FDA? How do we get a vaccine distributed after this broken Trumpist nonsense has infected everything, even if somebody, Biden wins, among other things. So Nicki Minaj has tweeted out a line homophobic, and then I can't even say the word that she used. I'm not going to, a racial pejorative, not the N-word. I guess I can join in the reindeer games too, right? People can go on TV and lie about me. I can report them too, right? Doesn't have to be truths. It can be half-truths. Uncle Tommy Anna asked who on earth would trust the U.S. FDA guys, and then a link to the Joy Reid controversy, from homophobic blog post to a hacking claim explained. MSNBC host Joy Reid was accused of writing homophobic blog posts. Reid at first said she was hacked, then apologized. Fantastic day on the internet, folks. I forgot to mention in the last segment that this hour of the program is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you're in charge of the finances for a business, reach out to them, see if they can help you. FirstLibertyGA.com. They want to help you grow. FirstLibertyGA.com. I need to talk about the California recall. I was going to do a bit of a short segment on this, but I think it deserves a little more attention than I could have given it in a short segment. I don't want to dwell on it. I'm happy to take your phone calls as well. 877-973-7425. The California recall is today. If polling is correct, Gavin Newsom is going to win. If polling is correct. Now, we don't know that the polling is correct, but the polling took a decisive turn in his favor more than a month ago when Larry Elder became the focus. And these days everybody's so sensitive about everything. You got to be diplomatic in how you say this, but I think that there was a messaging error on the part of Republicans in California. As long as the recall was about Gavin Newsom was likely to lose. But Gavin Newsom and the media made it about Larry Elder. Elder jumped into the race. The California Republicans couldn't stop him from jumping into the race, and he was able to essentially become the defining moment of the race. It was a strategic error, I think. Now, follow along with me here before you get mad at me. If the race is about Newsom, it's about Newsom. If it's about Larry Elder, then it helps Newsom because California is still overwhelmingly Democrat. The media, of course, wanted to make it about Larry Elder, but there are ways a smart campaign can stay on message, and that message being that this is about Gavin Newsom. So, for example, you got to keep in mind the media is locked in to both sides. It is one of the main grievances of the left right now that the media is too interested in covering both sides. If you give them nothing to cover, they can't cover both sides of it. And so they tend not to overwhelmingly cover it. So, for example, Larry Elder, they decided they wanted to go through his history of statements that they don't like that are conservative statements and other accusations about Larry Elder. And they shove microphones in Larry Elder's face and Larry Elder responds. And then Larry Elder goes on Fox repeatedly. The problem is you should not, if you're running a recall in California, you don't go on Fox. Because if you go on Fox, the media in California is going to cover your repeated appearance on Fox News, which is a big signal to people on the left that, hey, this guy really is one of them and we don't like them. So what do you do? Well, what you do is you go back to Newsom every time. Candidate X, in the past, you have said that women should stay home and raise children. It sounds like you're opposed to women in the workforce. Well, this really isn't about my statements. It's about Gavin Newsom. No, this is what you said. Well, we're not focused on what I said. We're focused on what Gavin Newsom did. No, we want to focus on this. Well, Californians are focused on Gavin Newsom and Gavin Newsom's hypocrisy during the lockdowns. Gavin Newsom made you wear a mask but didn't make his kids wear a mask. He made you stay home while he went to fancy restaurants at night. But what about Gavin Newsom? This is about Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom's being recalled, not me. But you're likely to be the replacement. Well, we don't know who's going to be the replacement. There are a bunch of candidates. You're focused on me, but we're focused on Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom is the problem. Gavin Newsom needs to be recalled. The voters will sort this out in the voting booth. There are plenty of candidates for them to choose from to replace Gavin Newsom. But the question is, should Gavin Newsom be recalled? And based on his pattern in history, yes, he should be recalled. You don't make it about you. You don't make it about you. You don't take the bait for the media. You don't respond to the attacks. When you respond to the attacks, you make it an attack on Gavin Newsom over and over and over and over and over and over. You do this. Californians are not going to elect someone as conservative as you or me or Larry Elder. They're just not. The last time a recall was successful in California was against Gray Davis. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger who came out as a largely near pro-abortion. I think he's actually pro-choice. His wife at the time certainly is pro-abortion. He supported the Second Amendment. He supported abortion rights. He was socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and they went with him. But a social conservative in California isn't going to get elected. And if the media and the Democrats can make it about that person, that person's going to sabotage the recall. And I'm afraid that the Republicans fell for the trap. And behind the scenes, Republicans are throwing Larry Elder under the bus, saying they had this until he made it about himself. When Larry Elder started running as the candidate who would replace Gavin Newsom, the media was then allowed to make it a Gavin Newsom versus Larry Elder race. I mean, and people can say, well, they were always going to do this. They were always going to try to do it. It doesn't mean they would be successful. Listen, I'm on Fox. I like Fox. I think Fox is a great network. But if you're in California and all you're doing are Fox News interviews, you are signaling that you're one of them. And in California, predominantly Democrats rule the roost. And so what you're doing is you're signaling, I'm not one of you. And so now what has happened is it has emboldened Gavin Newsom supporters to turn out in the recall. There were a bajillion candidates who could have replaced Gavin Newsom the moment it became about Larry Elder. That was going to help Gavin Newsom. In fact, polling a month and a half ago showed that the recall, it was 50-50 proposition, and now it's a blowout for Newsom in the polling. So now you're saying the polling could be wrong. The polling could be wrong. Yes, you're absolutely right. The polling could be wrong. We'll find out late tonight, early in the morning, whether the polling was wrong. My suspicion is given the polling trends, and they're all headed towards Gavin Newsom, and we know who's turning out based on the early results. It appears to be white progressives turning out for Gavin Newsom. If the polls are this wrong this time, then yes, the polling industry itself needs to die, and we should never talk about polling again. My sister, pollsters don't want to be willfully wrong. Now, I'll tell you the other thing that's not helpful. The other thing that's not helpful is that Donald Trump has already come out and said, well, they're rigging it. They're rigging it. They're rigging it. In Georgia, in the runoff for the U.S. Senate in January of 2021, 427,205 Republicans stayed home who had voted in the general election. The overwhelming majority of those 427,205 Republicans, you know who they are because they showed up on the registration list on the voter rolls in the general. They didn't in the runoff, so you can find them and target them, and several polling groups did, and like two-thirds of them in multiple surveys said it was going to be stolen. Why bother going to go vote? The Republicans in Georgia cost the Republicans nationwide the Senate. The Republicans in Georgia helped Chuck Schumer become Senate Majority Leader. The Republicans in Georgia did that. At least 427,205 of them did that because they believed it was going to be stolen, so they sent it out. Now, not all of them stayed home because of that. Some stayed home because they didn't like the Loeffler-Purdue message or they kind of like Warnock's ads, but two-thirds of them stayed home, which would have been enough to get both Republicans elected into the Senate. I mean, Purdue lost by like 92,000 votes. And 427,205 Republicans stayed home. He would be the senator right now had they turned up. And psychologically, they convinced themselves. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, the congresswoman from the area, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the chairman of the Republican Party in Georgia, David Schaefer, they were all saying irregularity, stolen, theft, improper election, all sorts of excuse making for why Donald Trump lost Georgia. And the net result was Republicans stayed home, cost the Republicans the Senate, put Chuck Schumer in as Senate Majority Leader. That's just, that may piss you off, but don't be mad at me. I'm not the one who did it. I'm not the one who suppressed the vote. And now it's not helpful, I think, for Donald Trump to be out saying, well, they're already stealing California. Who's going to go turn out and vote if you think they're already stealing it? That wasn't a smart strategy to do. And they're not documenting the irregularities per se. And will there be enough? Now, if it's a blowout for Newsom, and it looks like it could, no one's going to care. But if it's close, people will care. And one of the issues will be, did the Republicans suppress themselves? Kevin Falconer, I'm not a huge fan because he's a very moderate Republican. He's a very moderate Republican. He's a milquetoast Republican. But that could have gotten him elected, because he was a milquetoast Republican. He doesn't offend or activate or fire up or scare progressives in California. But the moment you put a conservative talk radio show host who goes on Fox News regularly as the front runner, and he goes along with it and defends himself as the front runner and fights back as opposed to continually turning the conversation back on Gavin Newsom, it was bound to help Newsom. And it looks like tonight Newsom will stay in as governor of California as a result. And the problem with this is that there are already stories out there that reporters say Democrats think Newsom's strategy is the way forward with his aggressive handling of COVID. And so what you're going to see because of what's happened in California, if Newsom wins this recall, is you're going to see a lot of Democratic governors say, hey, Newsom didn't get thrown out of office. I won't either if I go down this draconian path with vaccine mandates and mask mandates and everything else. The GOP didn't play the recall smart. They had a plan to play it smart, but then the moment it became Larry Elder versus Gavin Newsom, that plan went out the window. Now, you don't believe me? Here's this Politico reporter talking about the Democrats.
I mean, I think Gavin Newsom's response to COVID is something that Democrats nationally may take as a roadmap going forward to 2020. Overwhelmingly, Californians say this is the number one issue for them. The Delta variant and the rise of the Delta variant and his aggressive response to it has been a key to what looks like this landslide, could be a landslide victory tomorrow. Certainly, Democrats all over the country may be watching that. And certainly President Biden is watching that as he tries to institute tougher vaccine and testing mandates. So going forward, this could be the template, what we're seeing here in California for what Democrats may want to do all around the country in 2022.
That is deeply, deeply disturbing, but it's totally foreseeable. If Newsom pulls this off, they're going to think that the voters reaffirmed him. I don't think that the voters did reaffirm him so much as the voters rejected Larry Elder. And the only alternative to Elder was Newsom, and that's the way this race wound up being played. And I just, again, I've run political campaigns. It's hard to explain to people who've never run political campaigns, but it is possible to steer the media, even in California, it is possible to steer the media primarily by refusing to take the bait. You refuse to take the bait. The media has a hard time giving both sides of the story because the media prefers to give both sides of the story. And then if the media chooses to do a one-sided story, then you vilify the media. But that's not what happened here. And it actually really is unfortunate because I'm afraid it's going to embolden progressives to go even more draconian, thinking that Gavin Newsom was able to escape. You keep in mind, a month and a half ago, the polling turnout. Now, I will tell you, Survey USA was one of the polls. There were multiple polls. There was a University of California Berkeley poll. There was a Survey USA poll. There were several others that showed that the race was 50-50 proposition, maybe 51-49 in favor of recall. Survey USA then came out and said, oh, our bad. We made a data error. It's actually the recall isn't going to succeed. A month and a half later, with it being a Larry Elder versus Gavin Newsom race, Gavin Newsom is winning the race. We will find out tonight. Probably it's going to be early in the morning because California is on the left coast. But with the early returns, the people who tend to be turning out the most right now are white, rich progressives. That's not good for the GOP. The people who could have turned out, black and Hispanic voters, are not turning out at the numbers that a lot of people thought. So that kind of undermines the data on the recall. Again, though, if Newsom is blown out, if Elder does pull this off, the polling industry of America is dead. It is absolutely dead because the Republicans and the Democrats alike, all of their data shows that Newsom's going to win. The Republicans know it as well. The California Republicans are kind of running back their celebratory victory celebrations tonight because of what the data shows. So if their data is wrong, if the Democrats' data is wrong, if the public data is wrong, the polling industry is absolutely dead. But it doesn't look like it's wrong based on the early voting. We'll see. Now, right now, I got to tell you about Patriot Mobile because you patriots need to stick up for conservatives and conservative corporations. Conservative corporations want to stick up for you, and Patriot Mobile is the only conservative Christian cell phone company in the world. Now, you don't have to worry about the coverage. That's the number one question I get. What about their coverage? Their coverage is as great as everyone else's because they use the same cell towers. Congress passed a law several years ago that allowed companies like Patriot Mobile to use the cell towers that the other companies have used, and they use them. So you can get data, you can get voice, you can get great quality phone calls. You can port your phone number over. They can do it for you. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com. PatriotMobile.com/Eric. PatriotMobile.com/Eric. Or you can call them 972-PATRIOT. They have an entirely U.S.-based customer support team. So if you reach out to them, you're calling somebody in the United States, not a foreign country. So you can call them 972-PATRIOT or go to PatriotMobile.com/Eric. You get free activation with my name, Eric. Just tell them Eric sent you. They got special discounts for veterans, for first responders, for multi-line accounts if you're a large household with multiple cell phones. You support a company that loves America and shares your values. You go to PatriotMobile.com/Eric, PatriotMobile.com/ERIC or call them 972-PATRIOT.
I got to tell you guys, and part of it, I got to laugh at this. So I have signed myself up for a bunch of ammo websites. Do you know how hard it is to get ammo right now? My buddy Steven Yatowski over at The Reload, let me see if I can pull up the story while I'm thinking about it. Yes, industry survey finds millions more first-time gun owners. The National Shooting Sports Foundation Firearms Industry Trade Group released its latest retail survey on Thursday. Dealers reported in the survey roughly 3.2 million people purchased a gun for the first time during the first half of 2021. We are encouraged by the substantial interest in lawful, responsible gun ownership, as well as by the manufacturing base, which has been challenged to meet this remarkable demand. The survey findings suggest that increased demand among first-time buyers has continued following last year's record-breaking estimates. The continuation of this trend could have notable political effects when public support for new gun laws has started to decline. The survey found Americans aged 30 and under were the most represented age group among first-time gun buyers in this year. That same age group has also shown the sharpest decline in support for new gun control measures. Surveys of retailers conducted by industry groups have significant limitations, experts told The Reload. I don't think we have good data on first-time gun buyers, Robert Leader, a George Mason University law professor who studies guns in America, said. The NSSF data comes from a retail survey, which is the most scientific source. Public polling, another common way to measure gun ownership, has yet to show a significant increase in self-reported gun ownership among Americans. Experts noted those polls are likely undercounting gun ownership, though. So you got multiple conflicts in the data, but based on retailers, and this is the key here, the people who are actually selling the guns, they say we're hitting records in gun ownership. And now this gets back to the ammo email. I've signed up. If there is a reseller of ammo out there, I have signed up for their emails. And it is remarkable that when I do this, I get an email while I'm in the middle of a monologue. And so I wait until commercial break and I turn to click the email to go buy ammo and it's gone. That right there tells me that it's not just hoarders of existing guns. There are new gun owners. I was talking to a guy who is a gun manufacturer the other day. He also makes ammo, and he said they could build a new factory, but they're afraid the demand will go away, and it's going to take them a while to build the factory because of supplies. It's going to cost a lot right now, so they build it, they invest in it, and then the supply and demand crashes, and he's got a factory, and he can't sell the ammo, and he goes under. So he said his talking to others in the industry, he doesn't think there's going to be a massive ramp up in factories and in production because they still think that this is, in the words of the Biden administration, transitory. It's not going to last. But the trend lines are showing more and more people buying guns and going to gun ranges. And at some point, we need a greater supply of ammunition in the country. This isn't a gun control effort, but it's actually turned it into one when you can't buy ammo.